spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a can't win for losing edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. The Tide was dominant in putting up a 59-3 win over the Aggies of New Mexico State. However, the win was expensive, and that's true both on and off the field. For starters, the Tide ponied up $1.9 million to host the Aggies Saturday. Likely that was the big fee is likely related to additional travel expense with the team coming from New Mexico, as opposed to sort of regional teams like a Mercer who would bus over, or a UTC, or maybe even a Middle Tennessee State who would bus to Tuscaloosa. You don't bus to Tuscaloosa from New Mexico, so the travel expenses are part of the ante there. But more importantly, Saturday represented another injury cluster for the Tide. Roydale Williams went down with a knee during the game. JoJo Earl went down with an ankle during the game. DeMarco Hellams has a little thing on his, I guess on his thigh, a thigh bruise, and he could have gone back into the game. It's been an injury that has plagued him a little bit this season. Could have gone back into the game, but they elected to hold him out. I think Coach said the score at that time was 35-3 or whatever it is. So rotate him out, let him get well for the rest of the season. And then another injury that we noted, or rather noticed, but don't find reference to in any of the post-game, not even in today's Monday press conference or really any of the articles, and that's Emil Ekior. He went out, and they showed him on the sideline, heads down, and is like, well, is he heads down because, you know, maybe a just a poor play. I think Bryce had just been sacked, but they actually the camera hung on him, and no one talked about it, not even the game crew. And so if they had not sort of held the camera on him, you know, we wouldn't know this either. But they showed the team doctor working on his shoulder under the pads, and they got up and they walked him to the tent. And clearly, almost as they cut to commercial or cut back to the play, whichever way it was going, you saw Ekior go into the tent. And so no reports one way or the other on Ekior. That tends to lean towards him being okay. We'll keep an eye on that as the week progresses. And, of course, Emil Ekior, offensive lineman, right guard, his injury is on top of Darian Dalcourt, an ankle sprain still being out, and Javon Cohen with a wrist injury that, frankly, I did not see report of that until Saturday, but it looked like it was Friday night, the night before, when news broke on that. Looks like a practice injury. A little bit of a surgery. Saban said that Cohen would practice Tuesday, as would Dalcourt. I would say at this point, both still questionable for the game, so we'll keep tuned there. So we jumped into injuries a little deeper than I had intended. We'll probably touch some of that again when we get back to offensive line play. But hey, line it up. Tempo, tempo, tempo. Offense, go. Quarterback, Bryce Young, 21 of 23, which is a really good performance. He had 13 consecutive completions to start the game. I think that's a streak or something. His two incompletions, one was tipped, another was just a blatant drop. And so you kind of got to give the quarterback sort of not a pass on those, if you will. 270 yards. We like that 300 number, but 270 yards on 21 of 23 completions is really good. And the number that stands out that we all really enjoy is the 5 touchdowns. So that's certainly a lot of fun. We got to see a lot of quarterbacks take the field. And so that's not something that Alabama has really gotten to see a lot of this season. We've seen Paul Tyson a little bit. We've seen Jalen Milroe a little bit. We got to see some more of both. And then we got to see Braxton Barker take the field. For my money, that may be the first time he has seen action in a game. I'm not counting A-Day. And damn, does he look like his daddy out there. Just even just the T-shirt and the way it comes out of out from under the shoulder pads and the braces that he has. And then, of course, you get the helmet and look at his face. He looks like his daddy. But glad to see four guys get out there at the quarterback position. Again, you get a game like this, and Saban hates the questions ahead of time, and so this is sort of, you know, rat poison. But you know these games, if they go this way, you're going to get to see a lot of the youngsters, and that's always a lot of fun. And that certainly held serve on Saturday. Running back position, probably a little bit to talk about there. Brian Robinson had just another outstanding day. He was 9 for 99. There was a little bit of, man, I want to get him across the century mark, but, man, I don't want him to carry the ball one more time and get hurt. So I think that was fine, just taking him out at that point, especially with the injuries we'd already seen. He had a long of 63, and he went just untouched on that scamper for a long touchdown. And, of course, he had two on the day, so he had a phenomenal day. We got to see, I would say, an extended play or extended action from Trey Sanders. Unfortunately, that was at the expense of Roydell Williams. Roydell had one carry for 11, and then he was injured. He has had surgery, and looks like Saban didn't definitively say he was out for the season, but it's mid-November, and he just had surgery. So there's conclusions to be drawn there. If Alabama were to go deep into the playoffs, then there might be an opportunity. I would say the deeper Alabama plays, the longer Alabama plays, the greater the odds. But I think we all know what that means and what the odds of that are. Nonetheless, hate to see that for Roydell. I hate to see that for Jace. Hate to see Kamara Wheaton. We started the fall with five running backs, and we just, you know, tripping all over ourselves trying to determine who would be the primary runners, who would be the best backs. And unfortunately, it has been more a battle of attrition than anything else. And that's certainly no one would have bet in that direction. Kamara has not seen the field all season. Jace and Roydell go down with knee injuries. And so all of a sudden, it's Agatha Christie. And then there were two, Brian Robinson and Trey Sanders. Trey Sanders, again, looked good in his play. He was 12 carries for 66 yards, 5.5 per. Had a touchdown, and for me, that was just heartwarming to see his touchdown. He played so well early in the season against Miami. Again, he looked fluid. He had some swivel in his hips. Looked like it was just an incredible story, his recovery from the injury and the car crash. And then he went through a spell where he didn't play a whole lot, and it was a lot of, well, you know, he's recovering, he's getting better. And so I don't know if did he play too early or too much strain or stress? I don't know the answer to any of those questions. Those might be interesting things that we hear in the offseason. But nonetheless, Brian Robinson and Trey Sanders are going to carry the load down the stretch. We did see, and this was fun to see, and it's fun to see almost sort of the philosophy in play. We did see a couple of the position conversions to the running back position. And so I think 6-8 weeks ago, I think Saban said 7 weeks ago, Christian Leary and Demoy Kennedy have transitioned to running back, and they're getting some reps with the running backs. Christian Leary, as you're aware, a converted wide receiver. Demoy Kennedy, converted linebacker. And so it's interesting that, and if you step back and you say, why would they two? Why two? Why not one and just focus those additional reps on the one guy? And you sit back and you think about it and you say, well, that's just Saban's genius again. You take two guys from position groups, respectively, from position groups where we have where the Alabama team has some depth. And so Christian Leary from the wide receiver core, Demoy Kennedy from the linebackers, and primarily he's more of a, I think, a middle linebacker. So Alabama has a lot of depth there. And so you take an individual from two position groups, and there's a little bit of, let's throw both of them up against the wall and see who sticks. And so, you know, there's strength in numbers in that regard. There's also, like I said, you're not depleting a position where you pull the guy from to help running back. Those are positions of strength that really gives the players an opportunity to play. And I think they will down the stretch. I also think there's something to the selection. Not only did these guys play running back in high school, and so they're familiar with the position, and they're familiar with what it takes. But look at the difference between the two individuals. Christian Leary for Alabama running backs is small. He's a little slight, but he's shifty and he's fast. He had three carries for 22 yards, averaged over 7. He's smaller, but he's a wide receiver, so you know that he has good hands. There's a lot of things that you can do with Christian Leary out of the backfield, converted wide receiver. Think of the wheel routes. Think of the options, the downfield passing options to a running back that Christian Leary would provide. Damoy Kennedy is a bigger back. I think he goes 6'3", 6'4", 230, 240. So he's a bigger back, maybe not 240, but 235. He's a bigger back, and so he can bruise in between the tackles. And so when you start losing versatile running backs, Roydell and Jace are versatile, both thick, thick-bodied running backs, but their depth at receiving the ball as well. You may not be able to bring someone over that's that complete of a package, or they're already at the running back position. And so you bring two, and between the two of them, maybe they can piece together some of the skill sets that Alabama would need, or any team would need, coming out of the running back position. So that'll be interesting to watch down the stretch. But it was good to see them both get some playing time again. Leary had three touches. Kennedy had seven, so you know, you might read into, well, he had twice as many carries. What does that mean? I don't know off the bat that it means a whole lot. Leary was more productive with his 22 yards. Kennedy, 16 yards, so that's just over two per. But again, he's the bigger guy running more inside. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. I know also that this was New Mexico State and not an Arkansas defense, or not an Auburn defense, or not a Georgia defense, certainly. So we'll see how this progresses, but certainly something to watch there. Another thought that I have, and we talk about manufacturing depth at the running back at any position, but maybe at the running back position, do we, speculating here, might actually root against it, probably doesn't happen, but do we see situationally some additional quarterback scrambles, maybe some designed quarterback runs? Maybe. I'm not sure that we're going to fully build that in into the game plan per se, but situationally we might see a little bit of that. Let's talk about offensive line. Really a makeshift offensive line on Saturday. We had Tommy Brown in for Javon Cohen. We talked about Cohen's wrist injury. Remember last week we talked about Tommy Brown when Ekuor lost his helmet at the goal line. Someone else had to come in. Tommy Brown was the first one in to back up that at that position. And so we speculated, you know, if you kind of look at the run the numbers, how are they sort of stacking up? Tommy Brown might be the seventh lineman sort of in queue if you were to stack him up one through. And so Tommy Brown got the start at the left guard position. When the twos come in, Tommy Brown plays at that position. So actually when the twos came in this week, he went out and we saw a third Ferguson at the left guard position. Chris Owens stayed at center. Darian Dalcourt remained out with ankle sprain. Coach said that Dalcourt could have played if needed, but against New Mexico State, you don't need him. And so let's give him another week of recovery, and then we'll see if he plays against Arkansas. Chris Owens missed on some snaps. He was a little scatter on his snaps, but I thought as a whole, he played better. And so what does that mean? Well, it may mean nothing because it was New Mexico State and not LSU. It could also mean that practicing the week at the center position, he was just able to get back into the form. And so it could be a little bit of both. Damian George, you'll stay at right tackle, his second start, or really, I guess his first start, because the change happened in the game last week with Chris moving over to replace Dalcourt. Again, I thought Damian George played well. It's hard to read too much or, you know, into it against the opponent, but again, he played well. And again, if you want to look at sort of comparison, first play of the game, you know, Chris Owens got beat by Mercer, so for a sack to start the game. So, you know, if that's a fair comparison, which it probably is, Damian George, I thought, continued to look good. Emil Ekuor, we've talked about him, no word on him. I think no word is good word in that regard, so we'll see how that plays. I think I'd like to see a line with Darian Dalcourt at center and Damian George at right tackle, so we'll see how that plays out. There's also an interesting thought when Dalcourt returns, and I'm backdooring this, what do we do with Owens, especially if Javon Cohen is out? does Chris Owens then actually go play the left guard position? And I don't know the answer to that. Would you leave in Tommy Brown, or would you move Chris Owens at the left guard? So that'd be something to watch for. That could be the third position. I guess if he's trying to catch badges for all the positions, then, you know, Chris Owens, good on you. But I'm not sure who would be the better player, if that's Tommy Brown or Chris Owens. A funny story about Damon George. Damian George, it's actually a special teams play. I think it was a PAT. He was late getting out there. Maybe it was a field goal. He was late getting out there to line up. It's what he lines up on teams in blocks. But I guess, you know, almost two full games as a starter at right tackle. He was sort of living the starter life and forgot that he had to block on teams as well. I thought that was funny more than anything else. Let's see. Let's talk wide receiver, and you can't talk wide receiver without talking about JMO. He was 6 for 158. I thought about it. Oh, I should go get his stats for the last couple of games, because he's been putting up not just over 100, but well north of 100. The last, it seems like every week we're reporting 6 for 1 something, 130 something, 140 something, 160 something. And this week it's 6 for 158, 3 touchdowns. Amazing. And then he had a long touchdown of 50. I want to talk about that a little bit. JMO, I think, is clearly playing himself into first round potential. I don't know what all the scouts are going to say. He's a little bit slight of build. But man, speed kills, and there's been a lot sort of smaller sized receivers in the NFL the last couple of years, and I don't know if JMO had stayed at Ohio State if he would have burst like he has at Alabama. So that's an indication. You think about transfer portals, and you think about that. It's you know, you think about, you want to move up in team, you know, or you move down to get more playing time. You want to move up for an opportunity to win a championship if you already sort of established yourself. Maybe you want to move down somewhere where you can play if the competition is really stiff. And then you take a guy like JMO. You know, look, I'm an Alabama fan, so I'm going to say Alabama ranks higher than Ohio State. But sort of in the tiering structure, they would be considered, you know, both. Blue Bloods performing very, very well. And for JMO to leave Ohio State and come to Alabama and have just the incredible breakout success that he has here, but was unable to have that success at Ohio State, is just an interesting sort of case study, if you will. But we're certainly glad he landed in Tuscaloosa. This team would not be this team. This offense would not be this offense. Bryce Young would not be Bryce Young if it were not for Jameson Williams. And so I think there's really something to that. I do want to talk about, sometimes we talk about individual plays, and there's an individual play. I went back and watched it a couple times. It was very early in the game, but it was a super fun play to watch and sort of break down. And it was Jameson Williams' first touchdown, Alabama's first touchdown, the 50-yarder to JMO. And it was a beautifully executed RPO. I think just a textbook RPO. I think the Aggie defense was really geared. Hey, Alabama's going to run the ball, and they're going to try to take the air out of the ball early on. They're going to run the ball. They're going to try to beat us up. And because we've done that to teams this year. And so the RPO sort of ate them up. Bryce handing the ball to Brian Robinson. And if you go back and look at it, he held the ball and it actually lunged forward. And so it really did look like, because Brian Robinson didn't just get in his gut and run, but he actually took a couple steps with what looked like he had the ball in his hands. And Bryce pulled it out at the last minute, put the ball up in the air. When he did that, the corner that was on JMO bit on the run. And what made the play a touchdown was not just the corner that was on JMO, but it was two high safeties. And the safety on Jameson's side, he bit on the run action too. And so what you had is really not that they were playing double coverage, but they were shading over top on Jameson. So unofficially double coverage, if you want to call it that. And both of the defenders, the corner that was on him man to man and the double high safety sort of shaded in that direction towards JMO, both of them bit at the run. And J-Mo was just wide open. If you watch the play, you say, well, there is a safety coming across given pursuit. Yes, absolutely is. That's the two high safety from the other side. And so he had certainly had time to run. And when Jamison got the ball and started running and looked over and saw the safety coming, you could almost see the thought bubble in his head. It said, you ain't catching me. And he stuck it into another gear and ran for a touchdown. That was a big play. It was a lot of fun to watch. And that was a fun play to sort of break down in a little more detail. A lot of fun there. It just shows how dangerous J-Mo can be, how dangerous Bryce can be, how dangerous this Alabama offense can be. John Metchie, he also had six receptions, same as J-Mo. He only went for 48 yards, his long being 26. He's demonstrating himself this season less explosive, although I would say this is probably stats-wise because Metchie's a hard worker, a great player. But stats-wise, I think this is his lowest production in the last couple of weeks. I think Metchie's a very good running back. I think he's a good two or three, and we've talked about that. But he can be very dangerous, and Alabama will need him down the stretch. I like to see both tight ends, both of the primary tight ends, get into the action. Cameron Latu had one catch for 12 yards. It was a touchdown. I think that puts him, during the Saban era, that puts him one touchdown reception behind Irv Smith for most touchdowns by a tight end in a season. If you guys, paying attention, you know that Irv Smith, I have a soft spot for Irv Smith. He's one of my favorite, probably one of my favorite Alabama tight ends ever. And to think that Cameron Latu could match or could come within striking distance, could potentially match or even beat Irv Smith's touchdown record. I think that's amazing. I was hoping that Cameron Latu could be like a poor man's Irv Smith. And now he doesn't have nearly as many receptions. He could get that number up. He's had some drops. And frankly, he'd already have the touchdown record if it weren't for some drops as well. But anyways, he's playing in what I consider rarefied air in terms of some of his stats. But it was good to see him get back into the action. I think he's going to be a weapon for Alabama down the stretch. Same with Billingsley. He had one catch, 5 yards, and a touchdown. He did have a drop. And on the very next play, Alabama went right back to him. And in Bryce's postgame, this is telling for me and telling in a positive way. You know, Billingsley had the touchdown and they dropped it. Damn it. You know, you got to catch that. Very next play, Bryce commented, very next play comes in. And the first read on that next play is to Billingsley. So that's not Bryce trying to go back to him. That's the coaching staff going back to him. Billingsley is the first read on the next play right after he dropped. There's a little tellingness there. There's been times where Billingsley, I think, may have been yanked after that kind of play. Certainly not the go-to or the primary receiver on a play right after a drop. And so I think there's something to that. There was something on the Twitter machine the night before the game indicating that Jahlil may not play. And so I don't know anything about that other than just that's something that that Billingsley's dad posted. But Jahlil played, got him a touchdown, and so that's great. Cam and Billingsley, again, they're two different types of tight ends, and I like having both and the versatility, and they both can be very dynamic weapons for Alabama, and I think Alabama's going to need that down the stretch. If we're to have the type of success that we want, we're going to need both of these guys to really step up. One of the more fun stats of the game is Alabama had 13 different receivers catching passes. A lot of the names you know, and a lot of the names that you've been wanting to see. Was it Thal Jones-Bell had 2 for 16? Trayshawn Holden, we've talked about him. He had 2 for 11. Ajay Hall had 1 for 10. Ja'Cory Brooks had 1 for 9. Javon Baker had 2 for 21. Christian Leary, we've talked about him at the running back position. He had 1 for -7, and I wanted to go back and watch the film. I was just too lazy to do it. I don't know if that was an outlet or if that was some sort of screen or if that reception came out of the running back position or wide receiver position. I'm speculating it came from the running back position. And apparently I've been mispronouncing his name all season, which I'm prone to do, but Robbie Oots, I've been saying outs. It's Robbie Oots, had 1 for 8, and that was his first reception. And I predicted, I can't remember which game. Maybe it was the Ole Miss game. Was it that long ago? Because Utes has been playing spot duty, but he's been playing all season. And so there was a point at which I speculated that he might get sort of a goal line opportunity for a touchdown or maybe a first down, and certainly a pass reception for 8 yards later than I thought. But I did think that he might somehow maybe get incorporated, and so we're starting to see that. Mini game ball on offense. I'm just going to youth. So many of the names we've mentioned, Tommy Brown, Christian Leary, DeMoy Kennedy in different positions, Robbie Utes getting his first catch, and so many of the others. So I'm giving my mini game ball to youth. Let's flip the field and talk defense. Alabama defense, again, looked really, really good. Again, it's hard to take too much out of it with it being New Mexico State. But 3 points allowed, 138 total yards allowed, only 9 net rushing yards allowed. Alabama held the Aggies to 3 of 15 third down conversions allowed, and really no explosive mental lapse like we've seen in recent weeks. And then the Alabama defense racked up 7 sacks, which is certainly impressive. The Will Anderson dispatch, he had 2 sacks, and those were primarily the stats that he put up for the day. And every time here's my measure on Will Anderson. Every time I look at a stat line, I say that's a really nice stat line, but I expected it to be more. And that's just a function of his activity. You see him all over the field. The announcers can't stop talking about him. That's a filter you have to kind of watch out for. But he is all over the field. It does seem like he makes every play, even though clearly he doesn't. And so when he puts up really impressive stat lines, somehow I'm like, that's awesome. But I thought it was going to be more because, you know, everything you hear about him. And that sounds terrible. I know that it does. But, you know, nonetheless, Will Anderson is just a complete player. He really is, and continues to get better and better. He's a lot of fun to watch. Dallas Turner had a sack, and that was fun to see. That was right after he had 2 sacks against LSU. And I'll tell myself a little bit, I am behind in my podcast listening. So it was just this week that I've listened to maybe the last 4 or 5 or 6 shows, including interviews. And I can't remember exactly which episode it was, but Dallas Turner had a decent game back a month ago. And I said, this guy's like about to explode and have a 2-sack day. And I laughed and I said, well, and you know what? I think that was, that may have been the Tennessee game, where I said that. And I said, this guy's about to explode and have a 2-sack game. And he did have a 2-sack game against LSU. I wish I had remembered that last week. But then he followed it up with another sack. So Dallas Turner continuing. And actually, he had fewer snaps this week because Drew Sanders played. He recorded a sack. And LeBrian Ray caught some snaps on that outside. Call it defensive end / linebacker position. LeBrian Ray's a defensive lineman, so definitely defensive end when he's in there. But, again, some of the versatility that we're getting out of that position. But kudos to Dallas Turner for his play. Hank Toatoa had a blitz where he recorded a sack. There was a really nice breakdown. Saban, that was sort of the play of the day. And Saban broke that down. And it really shared just some of the complexity, because it talked about here's what some of the DBs are doing, and then here's how we're stacking this up. And Brian Branch ran in the middle based on the direction that the center goes, and the running back went to chip on Brian Branch, and so that allowed Toatoa. So we really overloaded him. We sent 2 extra guys, and it's almost you're going to block one and miss the other, and that's what led to that sack. But that was nice to see, and it was fun to hear Saban talk about it. Just other individual performances. Jalen Amore Davis had 6 tackles, 1 pass deflection. He had a really nice day, and this was after missing time last week. So it's good to see him come back and perform. Christian Harris had another good day. And I say Christian, between Christian Harris and Hank, the middle linebackers are playing better every week. And that's been sort of a quiet topic. We haven't been tracking that as probably as well as we could have or should have. But both of those fellows have been playing really well, and their numbers are trending up the right way. And middle linebacker play has been, I thought, really good. Tim Smith was just a disruptive force, and I want to see more and more of Tim Smith. He had two TFLs and a pass deflection. Those are just for a big body at essentially the nose position. Those are low numbers, but impressive numbers because of the type they are. They're TFLs and pass deflections. Damn it. Those are, you know, that's called disruption. A number of youngsters got in on the defensive side. I won't even attempt to list them all, but there was a near emptying of the bench, which was really, really fun to see. I'm going to go my mini defensive game ball, and this is going to be a little bit sentimental, but LeBrian Ray had a sack and two quarterback hurries. And of all the sacks, Alabama registered 7 sacks. And of all of the sacks, the excitement, the jubilation, the jumping up and down with LeBrian Ray was just a little extra. It was a little different, and it was a little special given sort of his history-plagued career. So hats off to LeBrian Ray for his play. All right, so let's look at special teams. Will Reichert was 8 for 8 on PATs. There was a field goal. Jack Martin came in and kicked that. It was a 29-yarder. He booted it through, so that was good. James Burnup had 2 punts. He averaged 38, and the long was 39. And so we've been looking, why does he keep getting the ball? And that might be the reason, because he's pretty darn consistent. He hit a 37-yarder and a 39-yarder, and he averaged 38. And, you know, you can if you know what the floor is, you can certainly build from there. And that's a Saban sort of mantra, and we talk about that on the podcast quite a bit. So I've been asking, why does it keep kicking? Why does it keep kicking? And this stat line, as uninspiring as it is, might just be the reason. Alabama did block a punt. Christian Leary blocked the punt. So here's a young man whose name keeps popping up in a lot of different directions. He blocked the punt, which afforded the opportunity for Jalen Moody, number 42 middle linebacker, to field it. And really just camped out under it. The block, I think, went higher than the punt would have if it just been a regular punt. All the energy seemed to transfer directly up. And Jalen Moody caught the ball and returned it to the Alabama 4. I'm going to tell you a bad announcing sort of joke that made me think. The hit transfer on the punt and the ball went straight up in the air. I was watching a Braves game back in the 90s, back when Skip Carey, rest in peace, when he was calling the games, he was, I think, the most dull TV announcer that I've ever in my life had the distinction of hearing. And he talked about a infield pop-up. And I was watching the game with a buddy. We were in college, and we looked at each other like, did he just really just say that over the air? And Skip Carey, the foul ball goes – or not foul ball, it's just a like a can of corn to the infield. They went just straight up. And I don't even think it reached the pitcher's mound. And Skip Carey, in his dry tone, almost monotone, he said, well, it would have been a home run and an elevator shaft, but it's an out here at whatever the Braves field was at the time. At any rate, I don't know how I got on that, but the punt that Jalen Moody, the blocked punt that Jalen Moody camped under, I guess he caught that coming out of the elevator shaft and returned it to the 4. A couple of corrections, and I probably should have like a long section of corrections every week, but a couple of corrections. Last week, and I noticed it today as I was out running some errands, and I heard it, and someone had mentioned it to me before. I was talking about Alabama's remaining schedule, and this was after the last week's LSU game. I was talking about Alabama's remaining schedule and, you know, sort of resigned on what this team could be. And I was talking about what would it take for Alabama, basically their remaining schedule. And I accidentally put Florida in the SEC championship instead of Georgia. And so that was just a misstatement on my part. No, Florida's not. Florida's going backwards. And Georgia continues to look really good. So whoever makes it from the West, and we think it's going to be Alabama, to the SEC championship game, they will have a date in Atlanta with the Bulldogs. And then less a correction than as much of an apology, I listened to the Texas A&M podcast. And again, I'm weeks behind my podcast listening. And turns out I didn't even realize it at the time of recording, but I just had a terrible case of the sniffles. And so I apologize, man. I got tired of listening to that, and I'm sure you guys did too. So I appreciate your patience and no nasty grams on that. But holy cow, cough medicine it is. All right, next up, Alabama faces or hosts Arkansas, 7-3 overall, 3-3 in the conference. Arkansas off a close but low scoring affair with LSU. Arkansas won the game. Solid defensive team, this Arkansas is. Again, they've lost three. Pretty solid on defense, sound on defense. They play with a lot of emotion, a lot of sort of high motivation factor, and that's a function of Sam Pittman. Sam Pittman is just a joy. He really, really is. And so if you have a chance to watch the Arkansas press conference, I think ESPN did a special on Sam Pittman. Someone you can't help but like. And he's just going to be coaching the other team. But you're happy for him as an individual. He was a Georgia line coach, never really got a chance at a head coaching job. And he was able to get the Arkansas job. And he is in love with Arkansas. And he's in love with the fan base. And he's in love with the team. And he truly, you know, everyone's from somewhere. And everyone sort of has a favorite place. And Arkansas is Sam Pittman's favorite place, and they're just sort of a football match made in heaven. And so good on them and good on him, but he certainly does a lot to motivate that team, and I have a great deal of respect for that. When Alabama played Arkansas last year, it was the defense they play this shell, this almost this five man shell, and they allow a lot of stuff underneath, but less sort of over the top. They're not going to get beat over the top. That's their style of play. And they're banking on, you're going to make a mistake. You know, you may move the ball between the 20s, but you're going to make a mistake. The field's going to compress, and we're going to sort of make hay there. Plus, you know, they've got some blitz packages, and they come after the quarterback too. I really like their linebackers. And so that's sort of their style of play. Well, last year when Alabama went to Arkansas, it was a lot of the underneath. It was a lot of chain moving ball. And Alabama ended up beating Arkansas still pretty impressively, just the style of play and the mode of offensive performance, I think differed significantly from the rest of what we saw from Alabama last year. And so I think it's more of a chain moving underneath style game. And I think we're going to see that Saturday. And I mentioned the tight ends needing to come up big for us. Well, this is the tight end style game. This is an opportunity for them to get loose in coverage. And when I think about what style of game is this? What type of score, you know, might this game be? Instinctively, I'd go to, you know, this is a 34-17 style game. And I think, you know what? What if Alabama's defense really shows up like it has the last couple of weeks? And what if Arkansas's defense really has a good day? And again, they had an impressive performance against LSU. Then I'll look at this as maybe sort of a 27-7 style game. So it might just be one of those, let's keep the clock moving, let's get this thing over with. Arkansas may really never be a threat, but they may keep us closer than they want us. And that's not disparaging Arkansas. I don't think Sam Pittman has built there what he wants to build there. They've got a really nice quarterback, but I don't know that they have necessarily a whole lot beyond that. And so we'll see what they get built over there. But they're really playing some sound and solid ball. So should be a good one Saturday in Tuscaloosa. I'm going to actually try to make my debut in Tuscaloosa this week. So I will be there. If there's anyone listening that I'm going to hit my regular haunts in terms of the bars, restaurants, it's a CBS game. So after the game, hit me up and we'll see what we got there. In terms of our Zoom contest, the final score was 59-3. Mickey had 54-3. So we picked New Mexico State score and he was off by 5 on the Alabama score. Caleb picked 63-0. And so he was off by fewer points on the Alabama side, but he was off by 3 on New Mexico State. So I don't know how. I think I would give that to Mickey, 54-3. At any rate, a lot of us had big numbers for that game, and indeed, it was a big number game. With that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.